Greetings, podcast listeners. This is Dan with Spark R&D. Welcome to episode 10 of the Spark R&D podcast. Our guest on this episode is Spark R&D team writer Raphael Peace, or Rafa. He has just finished a three-year documentary film project called Yugen. I'm going to read directly from the website description of the film, and that reads, Yugen is a three-year borderless mountain-based documentary film that explores the connection we as mountaineers and environmentalists share with the natural world. As you listen to the conversation, you'll pick up a better idea of what the documentary will entail and really how much work went into it. One question that I had written down that I never got to ask during our chat was about the actual name of the film and what it means. It's a Japanese word, and it is often found in the concept or context of Japanese poetry. So for a little bit more on that, here's what I found on the World Wide Web. Yugen is said to mean a profound, mysterious sense of beauty of the universe, and the sad beauty of human suffering. I also found Yugen is a subtle, profound grace. So hopefully that helps understand the title just a little bit. As you'll learn, Yugen did not begin as a three-year project when Rafa first reached out to Spark to see if we were interested in supporting it. The original idea was to film over the course of 6 months or so in a couple of different locations and have a complete project ready for the following year. Well, the project scaled beyond that and grew a lot from the original version. I'm excited about seeing it, and I think it will appeal to a broad range of people. It has splitboarding, powder, mountaineering, big mountain riding, which will appeal to the snowboard crowd, but it also has a lot of elements of adventure travel, activism, environmentalism, and cultural connections with people all over the world, so it will be engaging to a lot of different audiences. If you want to see pictures of everything Raph and I discuss in the upcoming conversation, be sure to check out the blog we posted. It has a lot of cool pictures from South America, Kyrgyzstan, Japan, all the different locations that they filmed in. So with that, I'm happy to bring you episode 10 of the Spark R&D podcast. Hey, Rafa, thanks for joining us on the Spark R&D podcast. How you doing, man?
Hey, Dan, thanks for having me. I'm doing great. Just waiting for some snow here in Chile.
Yeah, we're kind of saying before, it's been a bit of a bummer start to the season down there, huh?
Yeah, but it's just how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, have you been getting out at all? Or is it just like completely unrideable at this point?
You know, it's been good every 2 weeks, and then between that, it's been pretty bad, just very hot, and all the snow melts between the storms, so it's been tough.
Nice. How long have you been down there for?
Too long, I think.
Yeah.
Like 2 months or 3 months or something.
Nice. Did you have a couple projects that you had in mind when you got down there, or are you just down there to, like, shred it up and see what happens?
I'm here to finish Yugen with a post-production team, and we had another project that we were supposed to be filming today and for the following 12 days or something, but I decided to put it off till next year or in the States because there's literally no snow.
Yeah, that doesn't make for very exciting footage.
No.
Rockboarding. Scary rockboarding, yeah. So you mentioned Yugen, which is awesome. That's kind of what I wanted to talk with you about. For all the listeners out there, could you maybe just start by giving an overview of the project?
Well, man, Yugen, it's gone through a bunch of name changes over the last 3 years, and project changes and idea changes as well. But it started back in 2015, and it's turned out to be a full-length feature documentary, which basically shows the connection that we share in the mountains, and it talks about the culture, conservation in the mountains, environmentalism, shows snowboard mountaineering, and you know, I wouldn't classify it as a snowboarding film. I'd classify it more as a adventure, suffering, educational film.
A good suffer fest is always fun.
Yeah. And I've looked at all the genres and everything while I'm submitting for film festivals, and it doesn't really classify within one, so I've just been submitting it as experimental film.
That's pretty broad, too, I suspect.
Yeah, it's super broad.
Nice. You said you started filming in 2015. When did you actually, begin concepting the idea for Yugen? Was it before that, I imagine? Even if it wasn't called Yugen then.
Yeah, I mean, I started, end of October or early November of 2015. And the original idea was just to go film in Japan that December and January and go to Alaska and then back to Chile. But I don't know what happened. I was in school at the time as well, so it kind of got complicated, and the finance was also an issue. So I added a Kyrgyzstan and did Chile twice and Canada. So it kind of grew to a massive, uncontrolled project for a bit.
Nice. I mean, that's what I remember. And when, we go back to 2015 and I was first getting started at Spark, and, you were working with Tamo because you guys kind of had some similarities on what you wanted to do. And you went and smashed really good conditions, if I remember, in Japan. And then you came back and you're like, I think this project needs to be bigger. I don't think we accomplished everything that we wanted to, or at least that you wanted to, as your vision kind of changed. Can you start by maybe just talking about Japan a little bit, like when you went over there and, that was kind of the first main stop. How did that all go?
Japan, it's amazing. The food is amazing, the culture. And unfortunately, we had a very tough snow year. It was a little bit below average, which still means you get like a foot of snow a day or more. But
yeah,
it was
rough.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, it was amazing, regardless of what all the locals were saying. The issue was it was very cold, so we had a very bad avi cycle for the 6 weeks we were there. So we were very limited on big terrain and all that. And, Japan, if you haven't ridden out there, I recommend you should, but it's tough. You can't stop, you can't turn very sharply, and it's a very fun kind of snowboarding looking back at it.
Video projects are challenging, but backcountry video projects are just that much more challenging because there's so many more, things to think about and things that can go wrong, whether it's avi safety or temperature. And when you're in the resorts, you can kind of wait out the storm cycles, and then you have these chairlifts and, avi safety patrollers doing work for you. But when you're in the backcountry, it's a different experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, filming is already super complicated. You got to keep everyone happy, and conditions have to align. And if you get everything right, then you have to deal with getting the shot, which is, it's not as hard, but it's very stressful, because if you mess up in the backcountry, there is not many other lines that are untracked if you already tracked it once. At least for the specific locations that we were filming, they're more objective driven. So you put one track on the mountain with a couloir, and then you can't really do it again.
That brings up a good point too. So you went to Japan, and there's some challenges, but it was amazing. And it seems like the project, which wasn't actually called Yugen then, kind of grew and scaled. Can you talk about just after Japan and how did your vision kind of change for what this project could or maybe should be? And what challenges did you have to face then in looking at it as a bigger project?
So I guess the issue stems from myself without having a film background. And thinking that documentaries are, you show up to a location and you film everything, which is why we have over 500 hours of footage, because I thought we should film everything. And it's tough when you're in such a beautiful place and every mountain is beautiful and every sunset is amazing and every cultural thing you see is beautiful. So it was tough looking back at it. I should have been very selective and kind of had a script, because at this point I still feel like the film isn't good enough. But it's like any artist or creator could tell you, you just have to put something at rest and let it be done, or else it's not even a project if it's not finalized. So, you know, after Japan, I saw that we need to complement the flat light, deep PAL footage with some adjacent footage of like open blue skies, bigger lines, and compare the Japanese Ainu culture with the Patagonian Mapuche culture and so on. And then I got the idea of, let's just go everywhere in the world and compare everything, because we're all the same people, and just kind of show the similarities and differences. And, you know, even now, after filming for the last 3 years, I feel like the world's pretty big and we should go film everywhere. But I don't think my crew is going to be too happy if we don't finish this.
You're going to have time for other projects, Rafa.
Exactly.
You're still pretty young, if my memory serves. You've got lots of time for these things. So, I mean, that's a good point, though. Like, I mean, you wanted to ride over the world, all over the world, and kind of talk about the connections, the people in the mountains, and the people to one another. How did you select the locations that you went?
You know, it was more of just like I read something online that said Japan was a place to go, and, you know, everyone speaks about spines in Alaska, or they speak about the Central Asia, you know, the Himalayas and Karakoram Range and all that. And having lived in Chile and growing up snowboarding here, it's always been my home here, so Chile was obviously part of it. But, I don't know, I just picked kind of the usual spots and attempted to do it a little bit different, which was very hard. You know, you can't just show up with and expect to camp for 2 or 3 months with camera gear.
Right. And, you know, like, so you're picking some of these, I mean, truly, like, some of the most iconic places in the world to snowboard, but it was more than just riding. You know, you were connecting with the people. Did that happen organically, or did you make some of those, you know, connections before you actually landed, or maybe a little bit of both?
Yeah, you know, you can't, for the connections aspect, for the people we met and everything, obviously snowboarding wasn't our primary objective, since we already knew that we were going to go there and snowboard and camp and splitboard and all that. So I was kind of focused on meeting interesting people and getting to know the culture and giving them a voice so they could speak their truth. And that was tough. You can't plan that ahead of time, no matter how much some people say you can. Obviously, it helps to know some people who are locals and they know the whole thing. But logistically, it was a nightmare because, you know, you have internationally known languages like Japanese or Russian and all that. But then you have Kyrgyz, which is a smaller language, and the letters don't even look the same as our alphabet. And neither does Japanese, but then you have indigenous languages like Mapudungun and Tahltan and all these other ones. So that part was tough. And then having the trust of these people that we met along our travels is even harder, because you're showing up with cameras and everyone thinks you're there to take advantage of them and kind of keep their image for your own financial benefits. But after talking with the people and showing them that we're coming there with a very humble expectations, and we're making a very grassroots documentary, and we're just here to eat what they eat and walk where they walk and climb the mountains that they watch. And once we got the dialogue started on that, it was all fun and games and lots of jokes. And, you know, we shared all the cultural experiences. So that was great. Which, unfortunately, a lot of the things weren't filmed due to a lot of indigenous tribes or communities would not allow any filming. But it was a beautiful experience for sure.
That's awesome. when you talk about the experiences, like lots of snowboarding, but you know, even more moments and connections with the people and the lands. Could you give me maybe, I know we can't go over all of it, so maybe give me like your top three of just experiences, whether it was a riding or more of like a experience person based kind of aspect.
For the whole film?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Top three? Damn, okay. Well, I think my number one top happy moment was coming out of the Pamir Mountains in Kyrgyzstan. Coming out alive and uninjured, because those were some gnarly 2 weeks of expedition snowboarding and attempting Lenin Peak, which is 24,000 feet, I believe. In 5 days instead of 21. And the bad thing is we were there during the shed cycle, so everything was falling, sirocs and huge rocks and some of the biggest avalanches I've ever seen. And the snow was completely rotten, so we had more obstacles against us. So I was pretty happy to have finished that and kind of hiked out of there, which took forever.
How did you guys handle snow safety in that? I mean, you didn't have a specific snow safety guide. Was it just kind of on you and the filmers to, you know, make the proper assessments and determine, you know, your level of risk and then just ride what you could?
Yeah, I mean, for the risk aspect, it's a little bit more loose when you're filming. I mean, I hate to compare, but you have all these other production companies that they have a lot more money, and it's obvious because they create beautiful pieces of work and everything. But they do have a large crew. They have support, often have helicopters and all the safety aspects. So you could push the riding much further. But in Kyrgyzstan, we were a couple thousand miles from the nearest clinic and like 100 miles away from the road. So we were pretty safe on the riding aspect. And as for the terrain management, everything is so big there that, you know, you just have to read it and feel it and have good communication with your crew. And spring riding is interesting. It's pretty safe. You just have to choose the right time of the day when it's not too hot.
Yep.
Which meant we'd have 22-hour days of hiking sometimes, and we would get a 2-second shot. So the filming ratio to suffering ratio was very off.
That's a ratio I'm not familiar with, and I'm mostly okay with that. I guess I am to a little bit, but on a much smaller scale. what about the elevation there? You said 24,000 feet, like, and doing it in a shorter time. How did your body handle the acclimation process?
Well, for the first, like, 12 days, we were just hiking, like, 16,000-foot peaks and snowboarding that. And then we had a couple days left, and I thought we were pretty well set physically. We were just exhausted mentally and physically after eating sardines and oatmeal and butter for the last couple weeks. But we attempted to go for Lenin Peak, and we were like a fourth of the way there on our second day, which was pretty good. And we decided to call it off because there were sirocs falling to our left and mud and rock slides falling to our right. And everything was, the mountains were just alive and everything was just falling apart, so.
They were telling you to maybe come back another time?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be there forever, so whether we come back or not is not the point, but whether we come out alive is kind of the point. So sure. We decided just to leave.
And then definitely, I can imagine, felt quite good coming out of the bush after a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, I mean, me and Jesse and Seth were talking for, like, the last 10 days about eating a dill salad and eating a bunch of kebabs and having a couple of beers and just the stupidest things. But when we went back into the town, it's exactly what we did, and it was great.
All right, so that was number one. What would you go with for number two?
Number two? Japan, just the powder, it's so chill. After riding all the other stuff after Japan, the ice and the you fall, you die kind of terrain, just being scared all the time, I really miss Japan and appreciate it. It's very chill. No matter what you're riding there, the consequences aren't as high as going to Kyrgyzstan or Patagonia or Alaska, terrain-wise. And it sounds stupid, but there's 7-Elevens everywhere in Japan,
Yeah,
and it's
you can get like sushi and
yeah.
Japanese beer out of the vending machines. It's
Yeah.
great.
So we would drive every morning like at 5 a.m. and then we would come back at like 1 a.m. It was very long days just driving around all of Hokkaido. So the thing I enjoyed the most about Japan was the 7-Elevens. They're open 24/7 and the sushi is not that shitty and the coffee is not bad and whatever we were eating wasn't bad. It's probably because we were exhausted and everything, but
Well,
yeah.
food always tastes better when you're hungry. That's a nice common law. And when you've exhausted yourself physically, it's even better.
So those were probably my two favorite moments. And then there's a bunch of like, we got rescued a couple times on some expeditions. So those were more like bittersweet moments, but they weren't my favorite.
Sure.
I guess my favorite moment would be just finishing this project because it's been a pain in my ass for the last 3 years, but I love it so much.
That's funny. Yeah. What is the plan now that, you've come, through this kind of journey with the film and yourself learning, connecting, just the whole, like you've just been saying, it was such a big undertaking. Now that you're kind of like the light is at the end of the tunnel, right? Most of the editing is done, the trailers are out. The tour dates are being set, what's next? I assume like the tour is coming. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
We have 7 screenings as of right now that have been booked and signed in the US, in Europe. We have a bunch in South America that haven't been added to the tour. And we have about 15 more tour stops that are in progress.
For
But
the
that.
Listeners, it's August 24th, so it's still pretty early in the summer. You guys will
Okay.
be hearing this sometime in September, I imagine, so just for reference there. But go on, Rava.
Yeah, so the plan is just to go on tour from September till early winter, and then once the tour is over, put it in film festivals, and I don't know what my idea to do with the film once it's done, but I might put it online for free, or I might put it on Vimeo Demand or iTunes for like $2 or whatever. So that hasn't been decided yet. I don't know how well or poorly the film's gonna do, but I just want to get everyone to watch it and enjoy it.
Everything I've
So,
seen from it so far has been awesome. So I'm excited to
appreciate
see the whole thing all together because I've kind of seen it in chunks. I saw parts of it, from Japan and from South America, from Kyrgyzstan. I'm excited to see it all kind of come together. And it's interesting because, like, one of our conversations here at Spark between myself and Will and John and people that know what you're up to and have been up to for a couple of years. It was very much the conversation was like, this is going to be awesome, but we're very curious like how he's going to
how's
tie
it
how it's going to come together. How is he going to finish? How is he going to tie, what's going to be like the thread through the movie to make it kind of come full circle.
And it might never come full circle, and that's okay. It's just, it's like a four-fifth circle. It's almost full, but it's just good enough, you know? I'll send you a link to the video here, Dan, so you can watch it for the movie.
Oh yeah,
And
cool.
just so you know what you're getting yourself into before the screening in Bozeman on the 15th of October.
On the 15th in Bozeman. That's going to be fun.
But I think you'll enjoy it. It's just very hard to get the educational side of the environment and the cultural conservation side and the snowboard mountaineering side all together. So, I mean, the movie is 55 minutes long. it's to where anyone who understands the mountains or enjoys the outdoors, they will get sucked into the movie because it's kind of a story of all of us. You know, it puts you in the speaker's shoes and kind of makes you understand the environment and the effects of each other. It's not a negative film. It doesn't bash people on oh, we're screwing up the climate and we should fix it. It kind of just enlightens you on what's going on and who your neighbor across the ocean is and all that stuff.
Do you have any shout outs and thank yous that you want to give while I've got you on the line here?
Man, you know, I was doing the credits these last couple days for the movie, and there's a lot of people I have to thank, and I'm not going to spend the next 5 hours doing it here on the podcast.
Fair enough.
But, you know, besides the sponsors like Spark, you guys have been great since day one, since I joined as an athlete, and then more so supporting my crazy ideas. But forget the ski industry for a second. It's just all the friends and family and, you know, you, Dan, and everyone else. It's just, it's all the trust, and it's kind of beautiful seeing people believe in my work, and it's very humbling. I really appreciate it. But, man, without my sponsors, I wouldn't have any gear or financial support to go do it, so I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, I think all big projects take, you know, some luck, some trust, some money, and, you know, and that friendship bond connection to kind of see it all through. So it's always like a working mix like that too. But I think that was well said. And I don't think any of our listeners want you to be on here for an hour just thanking people either. So that's fair. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, I don't know how the saying goes, but you know how they say it takes a community to raise a child or whatever?
It takes a village, man. It takes a village.
Yeah, same thing, but... It
takes a village to put on a feature-length backcountry documentary.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine that I might have done the majority of the work, but if it wasn't for, like, the outdoor community just supporting, you know, sending emails and, like, advice and everything, because I learned everything along the way. So if it wasn't for everyone's input, this would have ended probably like 2 years ago.
Well, that was the original goal too. I remember being, you know, talking here at Spark HQ, and someone's like, yeah, so what's happening with Connections, like the pre-Yugen name? And I was like, oh yeah, he should be finishing that up pretty soon. And, you know, sure enough, there's an email in my inbox from Rafa Peace. And I'm like, oh yeah, he's going to tell me like what's going on and how the project's going. He's like, oh, I think it's going to go on for 2 more years. And I was like, okay, all right. And then, you know, instead of just being like, hey, give me more money, it needs to be bigger, you had a very nice presentation and you'd given it a lot of thought. So, you know, we were happy to jump on board, but, you know, it was cool to watch you kind of grow with it and be able to bring it all together. And I know you just said you don't know if it's full circle, but to me, I think it's come full circle because it was, you know, a very ambitious undertaking, and I've watched the project grow and you grow with it. So it's cool to see it kind of coming to an end.
Yeah. I mean, what's cool about the film is I've seen the whole thing and everything, but looking back at who I was a couple years ago, I haven't changed at all, but I think I've grown as an athlete and as a more patient human being, which is great.
Yep, both good qualities.
And with that, I got a bunch of more projects in the works. So the future films and projects that everyone will be seeing, they will be a little bit, I wouldn't say better, but more organized, and it won't take 3 years to have it online for everyone to watch.
Unless you just decide to get real ambitious again.
I think I will, but with many projects at the same time and not just one.
Cool. When is the actual like world premiere of this going down?
September 27th in Golden, Colorado at the American Mountaineering Museum.
Awesome. How do people get tickets and just find out more information about Connections Movement films and Yugen?
You know, social media, they could go to, I'm sure Spark has some stuff posted, but I would go to our website, connectionsmovement.com, and then there's links to the tour and everything there.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it, Rafa, and as always, it was good to catch up with you. This is a great time of year to be talking. I know you're busy down in Chile. I, you know, hope the snow turns around for you, but, you know, like I've been saying, we're proud of you for doing this, and it's been fun to watch it happen, and it's been great catching up with you for a minute, so thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity, Dan.
All right, great. Take care, Rafa. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, later, Dan. Have a good one.
All right. As Raphael mentioned, you can find more information on the film at connectionsmovement.com. We were alluding to this at the end of our conversation, but he has already added a lot of new tour dates across the world, so it's worth heading over to the website and checking out all the new locations where the film will be screened. I'm very much looking forward to the screening at the Rialto here in Bozeman on October 15th. Should be a great night. Again, if you want to see more images from the locations that Rafa mentioned, check out the blog we just dropped on sparkrnd.com. My thanks again to Rafa for taking the time to join me. I definitely enjoyed our conversation. And don't forget, you can rate and review the podcast on iTunes or however you listen to your podcasts. Rating the podcast helps other people find the podcast, which is, of course, a good thing. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been episode 10 of the Spark R&D podcast.